This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
It ain't Aaron Boone, people. It ain't Aaron Boone, and there are decisions to be made in relatively short order for the Yankees. It is Carlin, 800-919-3776 on Twitter. It's at Chris Carlin, Instagram, that guy Carlin. Check in by all means, whatever your mode of communication that is desired is. Looking forward to talking with you in just moments. So let's get it rolling on the open lines at 800-919-3776. Plenty of Nets talk to get into throughout the course of the evening, including the fact that Kyrie Irving is officially out for Game 5. So what will it take for the Nets to actually win? And why this is all about Kevin Durant and what he is about in his career. We, though, start with the struggling Yankees. And it is tough to watch. Tough to watch on many levels right now. They're not a very energetic bunch. They're not a fun bunch. They're not a team that's easy to root for. It's not like they're bad guys. They're just boring and not a good team. Boring and bad is very bad. I'm not a math guy, but that's what, when I put together boring and bad, I get bad. Look, we have told you this, and we have told you this, and we have told you this. This is a team that is constructed poorly. And when you look back to the beginning of last season, albeit a shortened season, as now you see some people coming around to this notion, and I'm not talking about Michael here either. They were inconsistent last year, and now they're inconsistent this year. Bad teams are inconsistent. So when I look at the Yankees, I can recognize exactly why they're inconsistent. Their pitching outside of Gerrit Cole is not consistent enough. And let's face it, Gerrit Cole has not been, well, he hasn't been the Yankees' biggest problem. He has certainly not been the lights out ace that he is supposed to be this season. He's been pretty darn good, but there are times where it kind of gets away from him. And then you go beyond him. The pitching really hasn't gotten it done over the last couple of weeks. The rotation has been inconsistent. Domingo Germán was god-awful yesterday. Jordan Montgomery is meh. Corey Kluber is hurt. Jameson Taillon, not good. So, top to bottom in the rotation, that hasn't exactly gotten it done. At least consistency. Consistently, they haven't gotten it done. Then I look at their offense, and the word consistent doesn't belong anywhere near it. When you have a game like Saturday and you have a tremendous emotional comeback and you end up losing the game, it does feel like a kick to the gut. It's not like Aroldis Chapman got lit up on Saturday afternoon. It was a bunt and an infield single that beat him. That's going to happen with the new crazy rule. So you have that. You have an offense that when you go down the lineup, when you have a guy like Giancarlo Stanton and you have a guy like Aaron Judge and you have these big guys who are prone to the strikeout in it, and they are the center of what you do, despite the fact that Judge has had a pretty darn good year, it leads to inconsistency. The guy who has been just flat out bad for him and has been the major, major disappointment for the Yankees this year is DJ LeMahieu. They haven't had Luke Voit. They've had injuries. Gary Sanchez continues to be a shadow of his former self, if he ever was anything that could truly be relied upon. And it's just ugly. It's just ugly. You want to continue to watch Brett Gardner every day? I know that hasn't exactly been 100% of the problem. I think everybody at one point or another this season, save for maybe Cole, maybe Judge, has contributed to the issues. And so here we are. The Yankees are sitting, as we speak, 8.5 games out in the division. They are in fourth place in what has turned out to be a pretty darn good American League East. And they are four games out of the wild card. So, over the next few weeks, you have decisions to make. And the truth is, this could very easily turn into 2016 again, except that I don't think the turnaround is nearly as easy as it was then. You want to talk about trading away some of your valuable pieces? Somebody would absolutely be interested in Zach Britton. Somebody would absolutely be interested in Aroldis Chapman, and you'd get a good amount back for both of them if they agreed to go somewhere. I think Chapman's got a no-trade clause, if I'm not mistaken. You've got Gleyber Torres, who you'd be selling relatively low on. And then you've got a guy that, frankly, is the real question. And that's Aaron Judge. Guys, we can talk all we want about how great Judge has been this season, about what his value is to the organization financially and on the field. And if you're being honest with yourself, you know that more injuries are coming. You know that within 2 years, he's going to be an everyday DH. You know that you are stuck with Giancarlo Stanton unless you pay off all of his money and he's going to go somewhere else. Do you want to reload this offseason? Do you want to retool and continue to try to find your way to win with this team as currently constituted, or an upgraded version of this team once some of the money comes off the books? Or do you want to look at it from a realistic standpoint? It's not tear it all down, but it might be cash in on some assets while the timing's good. And Aaron Judge is going to get you the most. He's not the problem, guys. I understand what he is as a player. But I also have to look at things realistically. Ask yourself a question. Are you definitively giving Aaron Judge a 7-year contract after next year? Be truthful. Are you doing that? The answer is the Yankees should be asking themselves that question. And I would think that right now the jury's still out. Maybe if he were to stay healthy for 2 consecutive years, you'd talk about it. But can you honestly believe that health is going to be okay for the next 5 years? You can't. You can't. You are stuck in some places. There's no getting around that. And it's not a complete teardown. But maybe, just maybe, it is something that you would look at and say, why don't we try to cash in high on guys that may not be here for the longest term? Why don't we try to figure that out now and get players who are close to ready for the big leagues? And stock a farm system that, frankly, hasn't been stocked with high-level talent in a while. Your best prospect is 5 years away. What I'm saying is, look at this hard and look at this long and understand that it is going to be in the best interests of this organization to think about trading Judge and trading Britton and cashing in while you can. 800-919-3776. There's so much more to get to on this topic, on Aaron Boone wanting you to believe that all of this is his fault, on just the aspect of the Yankees that perhaps is frustrating more than anything else, and that's the guy who has constructed this team, continuing to get passes. All of it's on the table. But in the next month and a half, this is going to be interesting. Because if it doesn't go right, and I have a feeling that it's going to go right down the middle and they're not going to give up on the season yet, I have a feeling that you're going to be stuck in purgatory for a couple of years if you really don't fix this sooner rather than later. If you're going to look at it honestly, your best chance for a quick reboot is to trade away your most attractive pieces, your most in-demand pieces. Britton would be in demand. He's got another year on his contract at, what, $14 million. Chapman would be in demand. Got another year on his contract at $16 million. Does have a no-trade clause. Maybe you would have to tag on another year if you're an acquiring team for Aroldis Chapman. And then Judge, I can't look at this and honestly say that I trust him for the long haul. And it has nothing to do with the player that he is. It just 100% has to do with his ability to stay on the field. 800-919-3776. Oh, let's go. Excited. Simon in New Haven. Start us off tonight. Simon, what's up, big cat?
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm great, brother. How are you?
All right. I have some suggestions of who we can get for manager and also, but first I wanted to say you're absolutely right about what you said about Judge. He's a gift from God. I would rather have him DH. I really would. Like, you're absolutely right. I'm glad someone thinks like I do. I've been saying that for quite a while now. Now, about the manager situation, I really think we need to get I got two choices for manager. Maybe the first choice, of course, would be Ozzie Guillen because, you know, he's a Billy Martin type of manager, and that's the type of manager we need. My second choice would be Mike Socia because I seen what he did to us in 02 and 05, you know.
Simon, I understand that. And I understand liking both of those guys. You realize it's not happening. They're not hiring an old school type of manager. It's just not happening. As you heard Michael talk about earlier, and I think Michael would know, if they're going to hire somebody like that, if they're going to hire Buck Showalter, then it means that Brian Cashman's a non-factor anymore. And for me,
you got to get rid of him too.
I don't disagree with that, Simon, and thanks for the call. It's not that I want to see Brian fired, but sometimes things do run their course. And you do need to start looking at building something a different way when it's not working well enough. When you have all of these resources and you're not getting the desired results, you have to look to really change the person who is designing it. Okay, you let your baseball people do it, but let's call it what it is. Your baseball people haven't gotten it done well enough. It can't be just about changing a manager that does not do anything that the front office doesn't want to do, and a guy who protects his players perhaps better than anybody. No, it has to be about changing a philosophy when the results continue to be the same. I get it. They're a winning organization, and they have been for a long time. But we know what it's supposed to be about, and when you're Hal Steinbrenner and you invest this kind of money, you would expect the return to be a whole lot different, wouldn't you? Carmine's in the Bronx. He's next, 98.7 ESPN. Ah, Carmine, what's up, baby?
Ned, how you doing, Chris? Good evening.
How are you, bud?
I'm all right. I'm just pissed off. They're disgusting me. Get rid of Boone. Cashman is not really, you know, he's hiding maybe in the back of the door at his office. This is ridiculous already. I mean, you can't be – they better not start pointing fingers at each other, because then that's wrong. That's what you call, you know, you're supposed to be a team. I don't think they're doing things right. I don't know. I think they
what is your biggest complaint,
right.
Carmine?
Do something.
Carmine, what is your biggest complaint?
Yeah. My biggest complaint?
Yes.
Boy, I got so many. my biggest complaint is that no more excuses. How's that?
No more excuses?
No more excuses. Yeah, because you know you're going to start with that next. Oh, but him and this and Simon. Come on. No, really. I mean, that's one of my biggest complaints, too. I think I'm going to tell you right now, in August, I'm going to call back, and I can guarantee you they're not going to win the division. I'm putting money on that right now. They're not going to win the division. In August, I'm going to call back, and you're going to tell me I'm right, Chris.
I don't think you're wrong. I think that they're not going to win this division. They're not going to go anywhere. And I think it's problematic to think that things are going to change when you just let them be. This has been inconsistent for 2 years. I mean, you talk about a roller coaster, it's been more than that. It's win 11 of 15, it's win 15 of 20 at one point, and then it's drop 12 of 15. Where does that find you? Right where you are, a game over 500. Bruce in Flushing. Hey, Bruce, this has got to be frustrating for you.
Oh, yeah. Chris, three Yankee questions. First question, if you're Hal Steinbrenner, are you going to give Brian Cashman permission to go over the limit? Now, it's Hal's money. He can do whatever the heck he wants, but Hal's got to realize if he doesn't give Brian the permission to go over the tax limit, then he's not going to win this year. Their fans are not going to watch the games on TV, and there's going to be less people in the stands. First question, what do you think Hal's going to do about that? Then we'll get on to more.
I'm not convinced he's going over. I'm not. And I have to be honest, Bruce, I get it. I understand it when you look around and you see other teams just getting it done better than the Yankees are and how they're constructed is better, and they just play better baseball, you know. I'm watching the Padres the other night, and I'm seeing a team that makes contact, that bunts people over, and I'm not talking about small ball. I'm just talking about situational stuff that they do well, and the Yankees don't do that stuff well. They don't worry about that stuff in the least. So I don't see Hal going over. I really don't.
Okay, and the Yankees aren't going to win. Second question, even if you don't go over, under no conditions can Brett Gardner be in center field. Even if you have to bring up Florio, and he may not be ready, but you cannot have Gardner being in center field tomorrow night. Agree or disagree?
Well, listen, I don't think that Brett Gardner should be playing center field at this point. Just not.
I agree.
I just don't. I don't. Bruce, I'm with you. He can't at this point be playing center field.
I agree. Third point. Do you think after the season we both described is going to happen and the fans are going to be kicked off? Now, Hal is not stupid. He's a businessman. If you go into next year, does Hal finally pull the trigger on Brian?
Wait a minute. Say it again, the last part.
Does Hal finally pull the trigger on Brian and fire him?
Yeah, I apologize. It broke up on me for a second on my end with our computer thing here, but I don't know that he does. And thanks for the call. I don't know that he does. I think with Brian, you're at a point where they have decided that he is the fifth Steinbrenner. So, and I find that frustrating. I don't know how you don't look at this and start to point the finger at the guy who constructed the team. I don't know how you do that. Sometimes it's just too long. But I think that a change is in order, but I also don't think it's necessarily going to happen because of the closeness of that relationship. So that's where we stand. And that's frustrating to hear. And it's frustrating to think about, because you honestly don't know for sure if Brian Cashman's capable of reconstructing this again. You don't. But then again, if you're going to let them make the decisions here in the next few weeks, and if they do put themselves in a position to sell off, well, he's the guy that's deciding on what to get in return for the players that you're potentially dealing away. Spike in St. Pete. Spike, what's going on?
Good evening, my friend. Good to hear you. I agree with you on a couple of your beefs today. One on the Yankees and Boone. I don't think he's responsible. You know, you're shooting the messenger. That's my take on that. And the other one, to jump sports, and then one comment on the Nets. The Jokic thing bothered me a little bit. I don't buy the MVP thing and LeBron. That doesn't sit well with me. Was the intent there? I mean, I don't know. He went over and apologized at the end.
I thought that was half-hearted at best.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Well, I understand letter of the law, but they use it when it's convenient. And the last comment, I mentioned it when Brian picked me up. You know, the condensed schedule, more games per week, and I think the team in the East that has the best chance now, with the result of the injuries to the Nets, is Philadelphia. And Embiid's partially torn meniscus. I don't think the Nets will be able to handle him at all. And if Tobias Harris plays up to the season he's had, I think they'll beat anyone. Because I don't think Milwaukee's that good. Honest to God, I just don't think they're that good.
I can understand why you would think that way based on what we've seen the last couple of days. Thanks, Spike, for the call. But with the Nets, I'm not sure what to expect because I don't know who's playing and who's not. I do know Kyrie Irving isn't playing tomorrow night. I've seen a lot of people check in with the idea when I suggested about the potential trade of Aaron Judge. You should attach the contract of Giancarlo Stanton with him. Nobody's doing that. That's not happening, guys. And it's twofold why I wouldn't do that. Number one, you're getting nothing in return at all. And I don't think anybody's going to want to do that. That's the biggest thing. But number two is just part of the first answer. You're looking to cash in if you're going to trade away somebody like Aaron Judge. You need to get as many prospects and major league ready players or even major league players in return when you have an asset like that to trade away. You've still got a year and a half before free agency. So I'm not going to wait much longer to try to gather as many assets as I can. I don't want to attach Stanton to him, even if I could, because that's too valuable to just give away. You got to remember something about Stanton, guys. It's a ridiculous contract. We know this, but do you know, I mean, just how long it goes? Do you realize that Stanton is paid through 2027 and has a club option at $25 million with a $10 million buyout in 2028? Do you realize that's the case? 60, 90, 120, 150, 170, $185 million left on that contract after this season. After this season. It's not happening. It's not happening. And what's frustrating to me about this, more than anything, is that we're in this position. The Yankees should never be in this position where we're talking about trading away one of their best players because it's the easiest path to a reboot and potentially their best path to winning anytime soon. 800-919-3776. Let us hit Julio in Manhattan. Julio, what's up, baby?
Yeah, so basically, the result, first time caller, Chris, thank you for having me.
Good to have you, bud.
Has been way overdue. It's like he's like almost like a Supreme Court justice. He's not Sotomayor. He's not one of these. It's time. It's bedtime. The reason why we have to stand under those conditions is because of the horrible contract that Cashman has given him. And not just only him. Previous players in the past, from Jose Contreras to Javier Vasquez to old Randy Johnson and the Ice icing on the cake was Stan. He's been trying to buy championships since he inherited the dynasty from G. Michael and Bob Watson, and it's done. I'm done. It's just time for White Crash for the goal. He continues to think that he can win these championships. He doesn't develop a farm system, and here we are. Here we are. It's been 20 years since our dynasty, and he was able to buy one championship in 09 when he gave $400 million to A.J. Burnett, Mark, and A-Rod. And here we are again with the same thing. It's time for White Crash for the goal. He's been long overdue. And it doesn't matter regardless, and I understand what you said earlier regarding his him being the fifth time runner. If it was George, God bless his soul, if it was George, that was a lot of people would recognize to see.
I know.
It's not about him. It's not about Al. It's about the Yankees.
You can't think like if it was George anymore. Julio, thanks for the call. You can't think that way anymore, though. If it was George. Yeah, we know. If it was George, Brian would have been out a while ago. But it's not. And so he has grown exceptionally close with that family, and they trust him to run the organization. The question is, for how much longer can you do that? I don't love seeing anybody get fired. I've been fired. It sucks. Doesn't matter how long you've been somewhere. But there is an inevitable fact that sometimes it just runs its course. And it feels like it's kind of run its course by now, doesn't it? Because as much as you want to point to analytics and all that crap, Yankees are just a bad baseball team that's poorly constructed. I don't care whatever numbers say anymore anyway. What I care is that they don't have anything in the championship column since 2009. That's what I care about. World Series appearances, what about those? You know? They haven't been plentiful, my friends. That's the last time. Oh, and Brooklyn is next, 98.7 ESPN. Oh, what's going on? How are you?
First time caller. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for checking in. Oh, what do you got tonight?
Just a simple question. You keep saying that the Yankees would get this big haul for Judge. Like, doesn't other teams realize he's always hurt and he's going to be a GH in a couple of years, like you said? Like, what do you really think you could get for Judge?
I think you can get a lot for Judge. I think you can get a couple of high-level prospects and major league player, because you have to remember that Judge still has incredible capability. So let's say you're a team that needs a big offensive weapon and you're not far off from winning. Aren't you going to make that kind of a deal to get somebody the caliber of Aaron Judge? I think you probably are. And I do think you can get a lot for a guy like that right now, because you have him at a year and a half before you have to give him the contract. So if you're a team that's ready to win and you need a bat like that and you have enough in the organization to go and do it and major league ready players and you want to win now, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you do that? Like, normally, I would have absolutely suggested, like, Aaron Judge to the Padres, right? But what do the Padres have left in terms of their high-level prospects? I feel like they've traded the majority of them away. We'd have to look for what the ideal scenario is here. But, you know, to me, I'd think about somebody out west that's going to make him happy. And I'd think about a team that I didn't have to see him terribly often with. That's what I'd be looking at. And don't think for a second that he still doesn't have tremendous value. You're not selling low on Aaron Judge. The one thing I will say is that every single day, two things happen. His value drops every single day. Now, between now and the trade deadline in 2022, every day, it drops a little bit. And secondly, every day, he's a day closer to getting hurt. And you know both of those things are 100% accurate. Buddha in the Bronx. Buddha, what's up, baby?
What's going on, Cat Daddy?
You know.
Oh, man, you have some good calls right there. Al Julio, he said he was a first-time caller. Please call again. I mean, he broke it down, I mean, as eloquently, but with a lot of passion as he can. And then you have Papa Lodge Sprite. You know, he broke it down about my Sixers, and they're right where we need them to be. You know, I'm sorry, ankles got torn and everything or whatever's going on, but that's a benefit to us. Now, with this Yankee stuff, you know, listen, the part that annoys you as a fan, you know, is that, you know, you read the tea leaves, you know that Boone is about to be the sacrificial lamb. You haven't heard that much passion come out of him in 3 years when he was talking to the media the other day. It is what it is. You know, he's not going to survive this. But it's like you said, and it's like Julio said, the part that's really going to piss you off is when you hear that press conference with Cashman talking about how Boone was a great guy, we really appreciate everything he did for us, but we think it was time for a change. I mean, that time for a change could trickle down all the way from the top dog down to, you know, down to Boone. I mean, listen, Cashman, like you said, his time has come and passed. And like Julio said, he did ride off the coattails of Stick and Bob Watson. But, you know, it really starts with Hal. And, you know, as much impatience as George had, Hal is Job. I mean, you know, he's setting the tone for this. He set the tone for this. You know what I mean? Let's be for real about it. He set the tone for this. You know, they got this guy's a manager. He's like a pseudo manager. You know, they're telling him what lineups to play and all of that. It's sort of like if my kid breaks your window, right? We're next door neighbors. My kid breaks your window, and I'm sitting there telling you about how bad my kid is. That's my kid. You understand?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's frustrating. I know. I look at it and I think it's a little bit problematic. And Hal is Joe because he does have remarkable patience, to say the least. I don't know that it's the best thing. Is the patience too much when it comes to Hal? We often have discussions about Hal and going over the payroll and do they honestly want to win at the level of their father, or do they want to win at the level that we all feel like they should, especially when you have the ticket prices that are charged? It's a fair question, but I think it's hard to get on him if that's the case. I think it's hard when the guy does spend $210 million to suggest that he is not interested in winning. I think you just have to look at somebody like Hal and understand when you spend that kind of money and you look around and you see other teams not spending as much money closer to championships than you are, that's got to be very frustrating. It's not that he's not willing to spend it, just wants to see the results. But the question is, when does he hold somebody accountable? Somebody with real power that's accountable. This now becomes about Kevin Durant with the Nets. And we're honestly going to get our first look at whether or not he's capable of carrying a team that doesn't have great second options if you can't get Harden back tomorrow night. 800-919-3776. It's Carlin with you. And from a Nets perspective, without these two guys, I don't know how you can expect to win these games. But I do think that it becomes incumbent upon Durant. Now, we can talk all we want about the secondary and tertiary guys like Joe Harris, like Jeff Green, like Blake Griffin, needing to step up and actually go and get the job done. Well, Kevin Durant is due for one of those games where a superstar, if he is at that level of one of the all-time great players, steps up and carries his team to a win. I'm not talking about the entire series. I'm talking about tomorrow night at home. You know, Durant has always, in his entire career, whether it's Oklahoma City, whether it's Golden State, or whether it's here, always had really, really good to great second and third options with him. It's been a relatively easy road outside of the injuries for Durant. Can we agree on that? And when I say easy road, yeah, they didn't get over, he didn't get over to winning a championship until he was in Golden State. But he's in conference finals. He's playing with Russell Westbrook. He's playing with James Harden. I mean, he's got big-time players with him. He's playing with Steph Curry. He's playing with Klay Thompson. He's playing with Kyrie Irving. He's playing with James Harden. He's rarely on the court where he doesn't have a second superstar with him. So what can he do to continue to prove to people that he is on that level of the all-time greats? We might be correct in calling him the greatest scorer, the greatest pure scorer of all time. Okay, tomorrow night, go get 50. Go get 50 and carry your team to winning that game. Do what Dame Lillard did a couple of weeks ago, but win the game. Win the game. Spike said it last hour, and I agree. The Bucks are good, but they're not that good. I look at them, and you know, Giannis has, for a star, major holes in his game. And not just talking about free throw shooting. I'm talking about shooting in general. Chris Middleton is he a great secondary player? No, he's not a great secondary player. The Bucks are very beatable. This is a game that, while they might be favored in because Vegas does not expect either guy to play, we already know that Irving is out for tomorrow night. Well, while they may be expected to win, there's no reason that the Nets can't win tomorrow night. And yeah, role players play better at home. And yeah, they need something from Blake Griffin similar to what he did in game one with 18 and 14. And yeah, they need Joe Harris to actually, oh, I don't know, make shots as opposed to the 3-for-13 from behind the arc over the last two games. And yeah, they need Jeff Green to be a force. They need all of these things to happen. I'm not denying that. But Kevin Durant could carry a team, and it wouldn't kill him. I wouldn't mind seeing it. Now, is it a complete, what's the word I'm looking for? Loss? Is it a complete disaster for his career if he does not win this game or win this series? I don't know if I would say that, but I would say that you are in a position right now to make a positive impact on it. Because I got to tell you, I look at Durant and I see a guy that's taking the easy way out an awful lot. So fighting through some adversity and winning a game tomorrow night, that'd be nice to see. And I actually liked this comment from him earlier today. And this was when he was asked if the mentality just needs to be next man up.
We talk about basketball all year. We talk about schemes and what needs to be done. And all of us go through scenarios in our head because we love to play. But at certain points, it's just about going out there and hooping. I mean, we can have as many speeches as we want to give, but pretty much around this time, every team is going out there and just playing the game. And we got a game plan we want to execute. As simple as that. And we try not to add too much extras on anything. We all know what this game is about, and we all know what this time is. It's playoffs.
And he is going to be alone tomorrow night because Malika Andrews got this earlier from the team that, yeah, James Harden is also out for game five. So it is on Durant. No Harden and no Kyrie Irving, just Kevin Durant tomorrow night. So how about it? If you are Kevin Durant, as you want to remind us, why don't you remind us on the court and carry a team tomorrow night by yourself with a subpar supporting cast? Yeah, I called into Rothenberg DCR this morning, and I mean, you know, it wasn't even just about defending Michael. It was more about, like, guys like me and Rothenberg should not be critiquing other people's wardrobes. It's just not what you should be doing. People with glass fat shirts on should not be throwing stones. The Isles are home for the semifinal round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you have the chance to score tickets to Game 3 Thursday night. Visit NewYorkIslanders.com/ESPN to fill out an entry form and get ready to bring the noise to cheer on the Islanders. All entries must be received by noon on Tuesday. So you got to enter soon, like tonight, like now. Visit NewYorkIslanders.com/ESPN for your chance to win. 800-919-3776. Mike in the Bronx checking in on those Nets. Next, Michael, what's going on, bud? How are you?
Hey, Cole, how you doing, man? Great show, man. Great show.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, first of all, I want to say I'm a diehard New York Knicks fan, and a Julius Randle should have won MVP. But, you know, that's a different story. But anyway, I just want to say, Kevin Durant, this could be the best thing or the worst thing that ever happened to this guy. Because you're totally right, man. This guy has had, I mean, a silver spoon in his mouth since he came into the league. You know, never had any kind of adversity, any kind of struggle. I don't know why people always compare LeBron, who bought basically nobody, to the finals like two or three times.
Well, I wouldn't say two or three times. I'd say once at least.
Most of every finals, other than the one with Kyrie and Love, were like bums. Not bums because, yeah, they're great NBA players, but it's all about relativity. You know, they're bums.
So okay.
Right now, if Kevin Durant can win this entire series, forget about the game, win the entire series without Kyrie, without Harden, and then get him back for the final, then he'll finally be solidified as, one of the great Iceman 2.0, you know. But now, this guy hasn't shown me anything, man. Hasn't shown me any kind of heart.
Listen, I don't disagree that it would do a lot for his legacy as a player if he were to carry them home in this series. If you did not have Harden and Irving for the rest of the series. You're able to rule them both out the day before. That kind of makes me think it's going to be very difficult to see either one the rest of the way, but that's just me. Rest of this series. I honestly think that Durant right now has been somebody in his career that has joined really good teams. I think he's an unbelievable player. I really do. I don't honestly think you can say that he's ever had to carry a team in any big playoff series. Like, this could really, truly be the biggest challenge of Kevin Durant's career. It absolutely could be. Because when you look at his history and who has been on his teams, yeah, there are different times. Yes, they're young. He was much younger and his cohorts were much younger, but he still had so much talent around him. Now, he has to get it done with a faded Blake Griffin, Jeff Green, and Joe Harris. Joe Harris is the second best player on this team, and they need him to make shots. So, let's see if they can. I'll tell you what would get fascinating, though, and I know they've only talked about it if they made the finals. Like, but if you were without these guys for a long time, it would be interesting if they could actually make the finals with Durant. And then, would you be relying on somebody like Spencer Dinwiddie to maybe come back in the finals? There's been rumors that he would like to get back in the finals, but they certainly don't want to bring him back and have him have to be a big factor. I don't think you can do that. Anyway, that's a bridge that we will cross when we get to it. Let's hit Eli in Newark next, 98.7 ESPN. Eli, what's up, baby?
Hey, Brother Carlton. First things first, hope all is well with your family, friends, and loved ones.
You too.
When I called in, I was doing a quick comment about Aaron Boone, but the Nets, too, if you don't mind. A little quick. I'm going to be long. Quick for each. Aaron Boone, look, the guy has been stand-up guy, answer all these questions every single day. This last interview, it seemed like he was almost ready to blow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's ticked off. And when you get asked a question about your team getting used to losing, I see where he gets ticked off.
Yeah, but it could be other stuff under the surface, too. You can't do nothing about it. You're the manager. Me personally, I would go into Cashman's office and listen, you know what? This team needs a spark. Now, this might be a spark or not, but you know what? At the same time, maybe I'll just buy out. I mean, go on with your life. You made money. You tasted this. You worked for this story franchise. You ain't got nothing to be ashamed of. That's what I would do.
You're saying that if you were Aaron Boone, you'd say fire me now?
I didn't say get fired. I leave. I just resign.
He hasn't made a lot of money. Aaron Boone has not made a ton of money being Yankee manager.
Listen. You're trying to tell me he make enough money from playing and being a manager? He's going, he's like the coach. It ain't worth it.
Okay. If you're talking about playing and being a manager, and I can go back and look at what the salaries were as a player, I'm talking about as a manager, he has not made a ton of money.
Be that as it may. Nothing is worth losing your mind. Piece of the way he almost lost it. Anyway, with the Nets. Okay, Kevin Durant, I agree with you 100%. You were OKC, James Harden, Russell, Westbrook, and you went to the Golden State, getting the players. Now, you got handed an NBA title on a silver platter. They ain't got them guys. Okay, another player got to step up, but Durant, this is on you. But let's not let Steve Nash off the hook either. You got handed NBA title on silver platter, too. Now, let's see how good you can coach with what you got left.
That's fair. That's very fair, and thanks for the call. I think Steve Nash has to show that he has some sort of a game plan here to beat Milwaukee. And the one thing I worry about with Durant is that PJ Tucker's in his head. It feels that way, doesn't it? It's not like Durant went out there yesterday and was terribly efficient. You know, he had 9 field goals and 5 turnovers in the game. And P.J. Tucker, you could just tell, like, it's seeping in there. When he is defending him, he's doing a terrific job. And I think that little run-in the other night is in Durant's head. It's playing a bit of a role here. And I get it. I understand why. I don't think it's a good thing. I think Durant has to get past it and relatively quickly. But I don't think it's one of those things where he's going to easily just get rid of it if Tucker's up in his face again. I don't think he's just going to walk away from it and he's going to be just fine. I'll tell you, this is fascinating to me to watch Durant tomorrow night. It really is. Because the more I think about it, the more I realize that this is one of the most important games in his career and his legacy as a player. Great player. Great, great player. Don't get me wrong. Love to see him carry a team to a playoff win in a situation where it's not, I wouldn't say it's not likely, but it's certainly not easy against great players on the other side. At least one great player and some other pretty good players. By the way, in his career, Boone made $16.3 million. And, you know, after taxes, it's probably, you know, 8, but who knows what's left. And, you know, when he's managing the Yankees, he's probably made a little over $1 million a year the last couple of years. I think when he first got there, he was making under $1 million. Managers don't get paid like coaches do in other sports. That's for sure. 800-919-3776. Ray in Queens is next. Ray, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on?
I think I just called you brother. As opposed to brother, I left the R out.
And my first name starts with R, so you would have thought that would have been
I just took it for granted and said, oh, I've already said R once, so I'm not going to say it again.
Fair enough, no. But do what you got to do. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
So on the Nets, I'll preface this by saying I know why they made the deal. He's one of the best players in the league, if not my generation, and almost 30 and at end of all time. And he has chemistry with the two superstars that were already on the team. But with that being said, I wonder if Sean Marks and company are at all regretting the Harden trade, because I'm sure they would love to see a healthy Caris LeVert and Jared Allen and Torian Prince, whatever that's worth, on the court.
I think it's hard to do, though. I think it's hard to sit here and say you would regret making that trade when you're talking about making a trade for one of the great players in the league and setting yourself up. And one of the, I mean, let's be fair, right? Harden's one of the top five players in the league. And the Nets right now have three of the top 10 players in the league.
But how many of those are playing tomorrow night? That's my point. Again,
it's hard to predict injuries like that with a guy like Harden.
It is. Thank you.
Yeah. You know. Okay. Thank you. Goodbye. Look, I don't think they would ever say that they regretted it. And, you know, I was talking about this earlier today with Bart. Bart and Han, 12 to 2 every day, right here on 98.7 ESPN. I think if you're the Nets, you're also not going to rush them back and get them hurt even more because you got another run in you next year with this group. I don't think you're just tossing this year aside, but do you really want to risk getting injured even worse when it comes to Harden, let's say? Or if you come back and you're dealing with one injury, you see another one happen from overcompensating. Durant, Warriors, remember? Yeah. I think they're very hesitant about that.
It's tough to lose, you know, great players, but we've lost guys all season. So if there's any silver lining, it's that we've continued to win games this year, regardless of who's been available. We've been able to adapt on the fly, which is difficult to do sometimes. But for us, that's something we've have some experience with, and we should have some comfort and belief that no matter who plays, we can still perform and play well and be very difficult to beat. So I'm excited for our guys. Great opportunity, no matter who plays, to play in a really big playoff game at home and improve from the last game.
That's Steve Nash, and he definitively will not have James Harden and Kyrie Irving tomorrow night. Game 5, Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks tied at 2 games apiece. And let's continue on the phones at 800-919-3776. Open lines, Dave in Jersey City is next. Dave, what's cooking, dude? How are you?
My point today was to say that it's not easy for a player, and I'm saying Kevin Durant, to go out on that court and score, let's say, 30, 35 points. A lot, as a fan or callers, that's not easy for an athlete to do, to go out there, let's say, 82 games and score 35 points. Durant has a career average of, I think, 27. He's number 5. He's like a couple of points over LeBron. And P.J. Tucker is not in Durant's head. This 5th game is very important. But, Mr. Carlin, why are all the Nets players backing off from Giannis? Giannis is regimented in the way he shoots the ball, but they backing away, and then he gets right to the basket, and he slams it right down.
Because I think that they – here's the thing. It's funny you say that. They want him to shoot. And I think they're backing away, trying to encourage him to shoot, and instead he has been turning on the jets and getting to the rim.
Look,
he has not shot the ball well at all. You want him to shoot outside.
But see,
every outside jump shot he takes is a win. Huh? I lost him there. Every outside jump shot that Giannis takes is a win for the Nets. But when he backs up and when you back off of him, you're giving him a little bit more room. You're almost giving him not quite a runway, but you're giving him a head start to blow past you. And it ain't easy catching up. Again, you want to take jump shots, take them. Go nuts. Knock yourself out. We will, if you're going to beat us that way, go ahead. But the thing is, the Nets can't stop him from getting to the rim. The Nets can't stop Milwaukee from getting to the rim at all. You know, maybe, and Kendrick Perkins suggested this early today, and frankly, I hadn't considered it. It's not a bad idea. Maybe it's time to dust off DeAndre Jordan and at least start using the defense and the fouls. That may not be the worst idea, because you have got to do something to keep them from attacking the 10 too easily. Raymond in Brooklyn is next, 98.7 ESPN. Raymond, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Chris? How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. I just wanted to say on P.J. Tucker and Kevin Durant, the referees were blowing their whistles all over the court yesterday, but when it comes to Kevin Durant, he's a superstar. P.J. Tucker, he's a hacker. Kevin Durant, he had one play when he shot the three-pointer, and P.J. Tucker, he clearly hit him on the arm, clearly was on his arm. How could you not call that?
Look, there are plenty of times where you're not going to get where the calls aren't made when they should be made. That happens all the time. I get what you're saying. And there are games where P.J. Tucker is going to be able to defend like that. And there are other games that he's not going to be able to defend like that. Look, Durant is a guy that is going to be more than treated with respect by the officials. Would you not believe that? I would think so. And I would expect him to get to the line more. But you can't tell me that Tucker, his physical style so far, hasn't at least gotten in Durant's head a little bit. A little bit. I think he's been in there quite a bit. But if you only want to think it's just a hair, that's fine. He's been in there. He's got a little corner rent-free right now. A little bit. If you're going to be fair about it. Al's in Maplewood. He's next. Al, you're on 98.7 ESPN, buddy. How are you?
Hey, Colin. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you?
Thanks for talking to me. I'm good. I'm kind of old with this because I wanted to go back to Yankees, but I'll touch on the Nets, too. Regarding Aaron Boone, you actually touched on something that I was going to talk about, which is he's pushing buttons. I'm going to use an analogy. If you, God bless you, you get to buy your own house, build it from scratch, you're going to hire project managers, you're going to hire architects, they're going to build you the house that you supposedly want. You can't fire the elevator operator because the thing ain't working right. That's what Aaron Boone is. He's the elevator operator. He's actually the elevator operator in an elevator that don't even need buttons pushed. He's just basically saying, how you doing? Here you go. Have a nice day. He doesn't even make the decisions. How can you fire Aaron Boone? You fire the people who built you the crappy house. That's what you do. The architect, the project manager, you find them, you fire them because they spent your money. That's what I feel about Aaron Boone. It's a shame he's being attacked like this when the players and the people who bought the players aren't the ones in front of the TVs. That's how I feel about the Yankees. Aaron Boone, it's not his fault.
I totally agree. And the real problem here is if you think Aaron Boone's the issue, tell me how it's going to get fixed immediately if you make a change at manager. And please don't expect anybody like Buck Showalter to be walking in. Because if Aaron Boone's getting fired, it means that Brian Cashman still has control of the team in all likelihood, there's no reason to believe that's not going to be the case anytime soon. So who is he going to bring in? You think he's bringing in a manager with a strong will and a desire to do something else? No, that's not the way this is done anymore. And by all means, it's not right. I'm with him 100%. Al's making a great point on the idea that you are asking all of this to be done and you're asking Brian Cashman to build it. I think Boone's a little more important than the elevator operator, but he's certainly not the guy that constructed this. And if the bricks are falling apart, how is it that guy's fault? Isn't the guy who built it in the first place? Sometimes it's just enough. It's been too long. It's time to try something new. And that's the way I feel about this whole Cashman situation. And it takes us back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, We're going to get into this more shortly, but we were talking about the idea that in the coming weeks, if the Yankees are just this, a team that could go and win 7 of 8 and then drop 9 of 10, and they hover around 500, what would give you any belief that they're going to find consistency in the second half? What would do it? Is it just the expectations? Well, we're paying so much for these guys in the back of the baseball card and all that crap that at some point they got to start hitting, right? Do they? Because it doesn't feel like that's the case, at least consistently, when they haven't done it in a couple of years now. So, with those decisions to make, maybe it is time for a reboot. Not tear it all down, but you've got a couple of valuable pieces. Zach Britton's a valuable piece for a team that's going to need a closer for the next year and a half. If you can convince Chapman that going somewhere else is going to give him a better chance of winning, and maybe he gets another year tacked onto his contract, he's got a no trade. And then there's the guy that you're going to get the most for, and that's Judge. Look, I don't expect it to happen, but you're not paying Aaron Judge at the end of next year. I really don't think you are, because you're just asking for a guy that already gets hurt a lot and a guy that's headed for being a designated hitter in a couple of years. And a guy who's going to want a 7-year contract. You're asking all of that for him to continue to stay healthy when he just hasn't been able to do it. And he doesn't have the body to do it. Kwashi on the car phone next. Kwashi, what's going on, brother? How are you?
How are you feeling?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. I have a question for you regarding the Nets game coming up tomorrow. Now, home court has a lot to do with it at this point. It's supposed to be 2 out of 3. Which supporting, taking out the 2 superstars, which supporting cast do you think is better behind the home crowd and the Nets, the supporting cast, the bench, everyone else behind Durant? Do they have what it takes, since they have the home court advantage, to pull this off without Kyrie and be at a
Harden.
Harden. Is the bench able to pull it off?
I think that they have enough to go win this game. And for me, it really speaks more about the superstar that is Kevin Durant and what he is supposed to be about. This game, in an awful lot of ways, is kind of a requiem, so to speak, if that's the right word, probably not, but a statement about his career. Is he somebody that could just win when he had all the great players around him? Or is he someone that when he didn't have them could go out and get it done? Remains to be seen, but tomorrow night could go a long way in really helping establish what his legacy is. Because right now, to me, he's an all-time great scorer in the league. We know all of this, right? But as far as where he ranks in league history, I don't want to put him up there when I haven't seen him do some of the impossible yet and carry a team to a playoff win. That's what I'd like to see before I believe in it. And he's further down the line that it's surprising that it's taken this long to, you know, be put in this position. This game's a must-win game for Kevin Durant tomorrow night. And it's a must-win game for the team as a whole, because you cannot go back to Milwaukee down 3-2. And then you're bringing, potentially, if either guy's ready, you're potentially bringing back one of the two, Harden or Kyrie, not at 100%, trying to find a way to get it done. That's not good. Then you're asking for a miracle.